one of the most fascinating programs you'll ever hear, as we explore the strange and mysterious world of the paranormal and UFOs. Welcome to the Paranet Continuum, a weekly program dealing with extraordinary claims of the paranormal, on Earth and beyond. Whether or not you believe in the paranormal, the controversies are real, and this program will try to get to the bottom of it. Your host is Michael Corbin, Director of Paranet Information Services, a global communications network based near Denver, Colorado, dedicated to the investigation of parapsychology, futuristic science, and the UFO enigma. We invite you to keep an open mind as we discuss some of the most fascinating and strange subjects around. Now here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And good evening and welcome to this edition of the Paranet Continuum, home of common sense, no-nonsense paranormal talk radio. Well, it's strange, it's real, and it's out there. Is UFO investigation a worthwhile activity? Can even more be learned from pursuing data on the older cases like Roswell? Was Shag Harbor, Nova Scotia, the site of an authentic UFO crash in 1967? Was it accurately documented by the Canadian government? And what about the photographs of aliens published in Penthouse that Bob Guccione swore were real? Tonight my guest is UFO expert Kevin D. Randall. He reevaluates the latest information on current and classic cases and comes to astonishingly revealing conclusions. We're going to be talking with him tonight. The Randall Report, UFOs in the 90s, will be the subject of our program. But first, of course, we've got news. This is kind of interesting. It kind of gives you an idea that there's that things are not all, well, backstairs at the White House, if you will, in some ways. This article has been contributed by the Washington Post, Alienation of Affection. It's not the war of the worlds, but a war of words between Senator Strom Thurmond, Republican of South Carolina, and a one-time aide, retired Army Lieutenant Colonel Philip Corso. Now, Thurmond wrote nice things about Corso in a foreword that appears in The Day After Roswell, the UFO Cover-Up, which is due out next week from Pocketbooks. Yesterday, this was a couple of days ago, Thurmond said that he was deeply disturbed because Corso really had asked for an intro for his still unpublished memoir, I Walk with Giants, My Career in Military Intelligence. I did not and would not pen the foreword to a book about or containing a suggestion that the success of the United States in the Cold War is attributable to the technology found on a crashed UFO. Strom Thurmond is 94. That is a quote from him. Now, Corso, who is 82, writes that he gave salvaged artifacts from a 1947 crashed alien spacecraft in New Mexico to U.S. companies. The firms used them to develop lasers, fiber optics, and integrated circuits. I wonder where we've heard that before. Corso isn't talking, but his son Philip Jr. blames Thurmond's change of heart on his staff. Quote, I hope the old-timer knows what's going on in his office. My dad is not capable of telling a lie. Corso Sr. worked on military affairs for Thurmond for a total of 30 months in the early 1960s and 70s. Thurmond's spokeswoman Chris Simcoe said, Strom Thurmond thinks everybody is as much of a gentleman as he is and that his friends wouldn't screw him. And this from the publisher. It's our understanding Senator Thurmond knew about the contents of the book and knew what Colonel Corso was writing about. Well, maybe Agent Mulder can get to the bottom of this. Interesting. We are going to follow up on that in the next week or two. We'll have some more comment on that, of course. Very interesting controversy about a book that hasn't even been published yet. Okay, also from Bloomington, Indiana, this is from the UFO Roundup. Editor Joseph Trainer tells us that a saucer lands south of Bloomington, Indiana. A week-long UFO flap in Bloomington, Indiana culminated in a saucer landing the night of Sunday, May the 18th this year. Just after 11 p.m., local ufologist John Tosti and co-workers were witness to a UFO. Okay, then at 12:15 a.m., eight UFOs blinked on. John decided to elicit a response from one of these by flashing his headlights from bright to dim on and off. Two ships began to approach his position. Not a sound could be heard as the craft moved in. Now, the car's electrical system went dead as the object hovered overhead. Tosti was able to make out a disc-shaped metallic surface with a round, smaller section dome and an even smaller but dome-shaped object at the very bottom. Emanating from the hole underneath of the object was a blue glow, which was so intense that it illuminated the roadway below. A shimmering, sparkling effect, like shiny silver particles, could be seen in the air between the bottom of the ship and the ground. All the while, a bright white strobe light at the very top was flashing rapidly. Around the middle of the section of the craft was a row of square windows showing a yellow to amber ambient light within. Now, 3 days earlier, on Thursday, May 15th, at around 11 p.m., John Tosti and fellow ufologist Lynn Taylor drove to the Morgan Monroe State Forest, which is located about 15 miles northeast of Bloomington, to do some skywatching. Now, across a field situated on top of a ridge was a bright yellow object. For a moment, it remained motionless above an outcrop of trees before it rose straight up and moved out of the area. The previous night, on May 14th, Lynn Taylor and his wife Linda were returning home from town when we caught sight of another amber glowing object rising in a northerly direction between New and Old Highway 37 West. The flap began on Saturday, May 10th at 11:40 p.m. when ufologist Jim Bailey phoned Taylor and reportedly said, "Sorry for calling you so late, Lynn. We're standing outside watching three UFOs, and they're heading right towards you." Now, pulling on his clothes, Taylor ran downstairs and out the back door. He says, "There it was. I could see it through the trees as it tried to sneak by undetected. I was staring at the most brilliant UFO I've ever seen. It flickered and shimmered like a road flare." Okay. Again, that was from the UFO Roundup. Interesting little article. Okay, now, a couple of other things before we get to my guest. This comes out of the Loveland newspaper, the Saturday Reporter Herald. It's an article written by Troy Turner. The title of the column is In Our Own Words. The title of it is Area 51, It Is Still Top Secret. This kind of is going to segue into another interesting little thing here. It says Area 51 is the limelight now because of the June issue of Popular Mechanics magazine, which reports in its cover story that the secret base has been abandoned and its operations moved to a site in eastern Utah. The move reportedly was made in part because of growing public exposure and the abilities of other countries such as Russia to photograph the base with spy satellites under an open sky treaty. The Utah base, known as Area 6413, also is a secret base that conducts guarded testing, but without the mystique long associated with Area 51 that first came in the UFO days. Now, an Associated Press story this week contradicts the reported move, however, after interviews with people in the nearby community of Rachel, Nevada, revealed that activity still seems to be taking place near the base. Congressional sources used in the AP report also disputed its closure, describing such an idea as being ridiculous because of the estimated $5 billion cost involved during a time when that kind of money is being cut. Interesting thing, it segues into the actual Aviation Week and Space Technology issue that was mentioned in that article, June the 2nd, 1997. Page 51, you might want to get a copy of this if you can. They are showing the title of the article, and here says, "Payload, Not Airframe, Drives UCAV Research." Now, what's interesting is that in this article, there are diagrams of the different types of UCAV objects or craft, I guess. These are unmanned craft. But one of the diagrams shows a saucer-shaped craft. I'm going to read the explanation of it. It says, "Potentially a saucer shape could produce the most maneuverable UCAV if combined with vectored thrust for maximum lateral agility. Moreover, a weapon could be pointed by simply rotating the aircraft without altering course." Again, that's the June 2nd issue of Aviation Week and Space Technology. I encourage you to get a copy of that and see that picture. One last news article before we go to break is we've got a new object at the solar system's edge, and it's a sign of chaos. This is contributed by K.C. Cole from Los Angeles Times. "A new kind of object orbiting the outer limits of the solar system in a wildly eccentric path threatens to disrupt the well-ordered vision of our local universe." That's according to astronomers at Harvard and at the University of Hawaii. Known only as 1996 TL66, the 300-mile diameter body appears to swing well out of the boundaries of the previously known solar system. Its highly unusual behavior suggests that far reaches of the sun's planetary family may be far more chaotic than previously thought, according to astronomer Renu Malhotra of the Lunar and Planetary Institute in Houston. "It has extended the boundaries of our solar system," she said. The findings published today in the journal Nature suggest a huge population of such objects may buzz around like a swarm of bees at the fringes of the solar system, according to University of Hawaii astronomer David Jewett, one of the paper's authors. The point is, he said, we have no idea what is in the outer solar system. And of course, another talk show host might come up with some pretty wild ideas. We'll see what happens with this. Okay, stay tuned. We're going to come back. We got Kevin Randall, who will talk to us tonight about his newest book, The Randall Report, UFOs in the 90s. 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-836-2009. I'm Michael Corbin, and this is the Paranet Continuum.
Denver's talking about Ralph.
There are many magazines about UFOs. Continuum is different. Continuum is the official quarterly publication of Paranet and MICAP, and is the outgrowth of Paranet's worldwide communications network on paranormal phenomena. It's in-depth, challenging, and above all, fascinating. It takes a straight-ahead, no-nonsense look at UFOs, worldwide sighting reports, parapsychology, abduction phenomena, futuristic science, and much, much more. You can get Continuum for just $18 a year. Continuum is also available by fax for a small additional fee. Be informed. Call now and subscribe to Continuum. Call 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-836-6381. Visa and MasterCard accepted. Continuum, published by Paranet Information Services and MICAP. Order yours today at 1-800-UFO-NET-1. Continuum, one of the most fascinating magazines you'll ever read.
Support the Paranet Continuum by ordering from the 1997 Paranet catalog. Paranet offers products and services designed to keep you abreast of the latest in ufology and news of the paranormal. Get full-color laser-printed t-shirts and sweatshirts with space travel and alien themes, including a spectacular black-and-white Paranet t-shirt. Get audio cassettes of more than 150 Paranet Continuum radio shows, featuring interviews of people such as Richard Hoagland, Jacques Vallée, Travis Walton, Stanton Friedman, Malachi Martin, Alan Hale, Betty Hill, Edgar Mitchell, and others, and topics ranging from abductions to Zeta Reticuli. You can also get Continuum, Paranet's official quarterly magazine. Paranet memberships have access to MICAP, our investigations group, and discounts to merchandise. The 1997 Paranet catalog is free. Call now, 1-800-836-6381. That's 1-800-836-6381 for the Paranet catalog.
AM 1280, Ralph.
Peacock, 1280 Ralph.
It's the Paranet Continuum, and it deals with some of the most fascinating mysteries around. Once again, here's your host, the director of Paranet Information Services, Michael Corbin.
And of course, we will not tell you that there is an object called the Draconians coming toward Earth. That's one thing you can bet on not hearing from here unless it's definitely assured. 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-836-2009. We've got to cut up a little bit and have a little bit of fun. What the heck? My guest tonight is Kevin Randall, who is a special investigator for the Center for UFO Studies. Now, he has spent more than 20 years studying UFO phenomena and is considered one of the foremost experts in the field. He is a frequent guest on television and radio shows about ET sightings, and he is the co-author of The Truth About the Crash, UFO Crash at Roswell. And it's my pleasure to welcome to the program tonight, Kevin Randall. Good evening, Kevin.
Well, good evening. How are you?
I'm good, and thank you for being on the program with us tonight.
Well, thanks for the opportunity.
This is an interesting book. I was noticing that in the jacket, it was talking about, can we really learn anything from pursuing data on older cases? Now, that kind of a question is very relevant and one that I would have to absolutely agree with, because I think there's probably a lot of things that we have missed over the time.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think we take a look at the documentation, we take a look at what's been going on and how the government, the Air Force, misdiagnosed, if you will, misinvestigated, misanswered a lot of cases. So if we look at that body of information, I think we can draw a lot of very valuable conclusions from it.
I agree with you 100%. Now, on the back of the book, you have a comment here that says, "We can safely conclude that alien visitation is taking place. All we have to do is separate the noise and the clutter from the facts as they have been established." Is that your sentiment?
Absolutely. I think that the problem that we have as UFO researchers is the noise factor, the fake sightings, the people making stuff up, the hoaxes, the government throwing in explanations for cases that have absolutely no basis in fact, no basis in reality. And if we can separate all that garbage out, and we can take a look at the body of evidence that is left, and I think that we can maybe learn something about what's going on. We've been so busy arguing amongst ourselves about the reality of the UFO phenomenon that we haven't really taken a good look at it.
Go ahead, Kevin.
Okay. What I was going to say is, you know, what strikes me is I don't think there's ever been a good scientific study of the UFO phenomenon.
I couldn't agree with you more.
The Condon Committee at the University of Colorado back in 1967, 68, and 69 was an utter joke from a scientific standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't use the rigors of science to investigate this. They had their conclusions given to them up front by the Air Force, and we have a copy of the letter now from a lieutenant colonel named Hippler telling Condon what he was supposed to find, and we have a response from Condon saying, "Thank you for telling us," and that letter is exactly what the Condon Committee found some 2 years later, 18 months later, came to those very conclusions, just as the letter suggested they would.
Now, I, Kevin, I've known you for a long time, and I know you've had a background in Air Force intelligence. And I know that when you started on this journey, I guess if you could call it that, you were highly skeptical. Now, I think it says a lot for someone of your background and caliber to be coming forward now and saying this is what we're dealing with here.
Well, I think what we have to look at, we have to go where the evidence takes us. And too often in the UFO field, whether we're a skeptic, a debunker, or a true believer, we don't go where the evidence takes us. We go where we want to go. And I think we have to step back and take a look at the evidence and say, is this conclusion plausible based on the evidence that we have? Does this conclusion make sense? As I say, I looked at the Project Blue Book files in depth. I have a book coming out called Project Blue Book Exposed.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did was I pulled the files that had a lot of information in them to see if any kind of conclusion could be drawn from it or if the Air Force conclusion was accurate. And what I found was that the Air Force was in the business of labeling cases. They weren't in the business of investigating UFO sightings. They were in the business of explaining away UFOs.
Right.
And I think, well, you played the Close Encounters music as you came on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a prime example. There's a case I call the Close Encounters case. It took place in Portage County, Ohio in 67, I think it was. And what we have are a number of police officers chasing a light in the sky, not unlike one of the opening sequences in the movie Close Encounters. And if you go back and you read the file, what you discover is the head of Project Blue Book talked to one of the deputies. His only question was, how long was it in sight? He didn't care about anything else, and that was the extent of the Air Force investigation. They concluded then that the police officers had seen a satellite, I think Echo 1, and then as it disappeared from the sky, they picked up Venus and they chased Venus across Ohio into Pennsylvania. Well, this is absolutely ludicrous, but the Air Force didn't investigate. Later, because of congressional interest, the head of Project Blue Book, Colonel Quintanilla, was forced to go to Portage County. And by a quirk of fate, that entire conversation was recorded. And what we learn is Quintanilla wasn't interested in learning what happened. He was interested in convincing a couple of the deputies what they'd actually seen was this, this, and this. He had no intention of changing the case file. No changes were made. So in the end, this case is labeled as a Venus and a satellite. Clearly, that is not what these guys chased. I mean, they saw Venus in the sky. They could say, that's Venus. Here's what we're chasing. The thing was within 500 feet of the ground. It lit up the highway underneath, you know, underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly they weren't chasing Venus. But the Air Force wasn't interested in that. They were interested in clearing the case off the books. And that and that's what I mean when I say we've got all this noise to deal with. We've got that noise to deal with. We've got the hoaxes to deal with. And then we've got the debunkers who know there can't possibly be any UFOs.
Right.
Therefore, there are no UFOs. Therefore, if you believe you've seen a UFO, you are deluded in some fashion.
I think that's a very accurate assessment, too, because one of the things that I've seen, too, for example, the Buff Ledge incident that Walter Webb wrote about recently, that was another example. I think what we're dealing with, one of the things we're dealing with, has been bias and, you know, a lot of prejudice when it comes to the content of these reports. We're finding out that there were entities even involved in them years ago, that, you know, this whole thing isn't necessarily new.
Well, it seems to me that what I've discovered is, and this is kind of a fascinating aside, but what I've discovered, if you saw an entity with only a couple of exceptions in the Air Force cases, you were labeled as psychological. That
right.
Clearly there's something wrong with you. We won't follow on that. The Socorro 1964 case with Lonnie Zamora is a clear exception to this.
Mm-hmm.
If you saw UFOs on more than one occasion, well, clearly you're an unreliable observer, because seeing a UFO is such a rare event, nobody's going to see one twice, and if you've seen one twice, therefore your reliability must be called into question. The exception to that is C.B. Moore, one of the leading opponents to the Roswell case, actually has two sightings in the Project Blue Book files, both labeled unidentified. So we've got all that sort of thing that we're looking at. So we've got to take a look at the overall picture and see what we can learn from it. And that hasn't been done.
Okay. When we come back from break, we're going to get into some of these cases that you cover in your book, the Randall Report, UFOs in the 90s. And we also have some callers. So all people stay on the line. We'll be right back after this. My guest is Kevin Randall. We're talking about the Randall Report, UFOs in the 90s. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Corbin, and this is the Paranet Continuum. We'll be right back.
AM 1280, Ralph.
We can rebuild it. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's best personal computer just for you. Better, stronger, faster than it was before. We have a stark ambition to make your computer everything you need it to be. You've had it in your dreams, now get it in your computer. Better monitors, stronger, bigger hard drives, faster processors and modems. You can have the technology the government can't cover up at prices far below what the Defense Department pays for a paperclip. Call Stark Ambition today at 303-809-0274 or visit our website at www.starknet.com. Call for the best prices on components, new systems, service and repair on single units and networks. On the information superhighway, it's better to travel with a nerd. So get yours today and put our Stark Ambition to work for you. Call Stark Ambition 303-809-0274 or see our price list on the web at www.starknet.com.
Pilots depend on accurate, timely information, both in the cockpit and on the ground. Skyway Publications helps with both. The Skyway Airport Directory and Entertainment Guide provides convenient, accurate information for safe flight and landing operations, as well as local businesses that cater to pilots. These are free pocket-sized guides with information on large and small airports nationwide, along with technical information, fuel and airport services, and businesses that can make life easier for pilots. Keep in mind, it's free. Check your local airport for the Skyway Publications Airport Directory and Entertainment Guide, or call area 970-669-1800. Call Skyway today and find out how the guide can also be a financial opportunity for you. Skyway Publications, your ticket to safer, cheaper, and more convenient flight. Check your local airport or call Skyway at 970-669-1800.
important to keep an open mind, but not as open as, say, a refuse can. We separate the facts from the garbage on the Paranet Continuum. Once again, here's your host, Michael Corbett.
And indeed we do that. In fact, 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-836-2009. Once again, before we go to my guest, Kevin Randall, I want to thank our affiliate in Denver, 1280 Ralph, who has joined the Paranet Network as an affiliate, and we want to thank them for carrying the program live in Denver. So if you're in Denver, that's how you hear the program now, is on 1280 Ralph. Okay, back to Kevin. Kevin, let's take a call. We've got a caller here. Craig is calling in from our affiliate, KCMO in Kansas City. Good evening, Craig. Hello, Craig. Okay, let's try it again.
Hey, I was actually going to say that my very favorite station is KCMO because you don't have to know where it is because it tells you.
That's right. Hey, Craig, are you there?
Oh, I'm here now.
Okay, good.
Good evening, Mr. Randall and Mr. Corbin. I just want to say that it's very refreshing to hear and participate in a show that is, you know, serious about exploring the paranormal and UFOs, and a show that, you know, kind of skimps on the fluffier aspects of the genre.
Oh, very good.
But, the two questions I had were how much stock do you put in the alien autopsy film? And there's a new film supposedly that was smuggled out of Area 51, and it's on Art Bell's website, that purportedly shows an alien interrogation. And I wanted to know, you know, how much stock has been put in the alien autopsy film, and, you know, should we expect anything from this new film that Mr. Bell's pushing?
Well, I think that almost universally, the UFO researchers reject the alien autopsy film. It first kind of came on the scene, what, 2 or 3 years ago. To this point, the owners of the film, Ray Santilli and some of those people, have done everything in their power to make sure that we have no opportunity to validate the film. They've treated it as if it was a hoax from the very beginning. I think that pretty well sums up the conclusions that can be drawn. The alien autopsy film is a hoax. The same probably can be said for this film supposedly smuggled out of Area 51. I think that we've got to take a look at the quality of the film, how crummy it really is, and that suggests that what we're dealing with is somebody trying to hide the flaws in the film by making it a very, very bad film. So I think until we get much better information, our best course to follow is to reject those films as authentic. The real proof of the pudding is those who own the films, those who are pushing the films as being authentic, must prove them authentic, and they have failed to do so. And in fact, have worked very hard to keep others from attempting to authenticate the films.
Okay, well, those are the only two questions I had, and I thank you for taking my call. As I told your screener, unfortunately, here in Kansas City, we get the Paranet show about 2 or 3 hours afterwards on tape delay, so hopefully I'll be able to hear the show in its entirety. Sometimes we have problems with the, you know, with the satellite uplink, mm-hmm. but hopefully I'll be able to hear it tonight.
Well, Craig, thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
Mm-hmm. Kevin, I have to agree with you 100%, and this is something I've been saying. I've been taking a lot of heat for it, but, you know, I heard what you said a minute ago, too, about the fact that we've got to concentrate on more of the scientific expedition rather than all of this crazy stuff. Do you think that some of this crazy stuff is out there just to kind of basically lead us off into a different direction?
I think that the majority of the crazy stuff out there is being promoted by people who find this as a way of springing themselves into the spotlight. If there was ever a great disinformation plan run by the government starting in the late 40s, I think they've long since closed up shop because they don't have to do anything anymore. We're doing it to ourselves, and we continue to do it to ourselves. When the scientific evidence, when the evidence suggests that a case that we may find particularly persuasive proves to be a hoax, and here, you know, in the Randall report, we talk about the Gulf Breeze case, and I think that the evidence based on the objective investigations of UFO researchers, not other people, but the UFO researchers, suggest that Ed Walters faked the photographs. I think we have to take a look at that and say, yeah, that's probably an accurate assessment. And then we see all the arguments of why we must reject that idea. When science, I guess, leads us astray, or science comes up with a solution we don't like, we reject science instead of taking a harder look at our personal beliefs in those areas.
And, of course, that's just too easy. It doesn't do anything either. I mean, it doesn't answer the hard questions.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think, you know, science isn't our enemy. And I think too often in the UFO field, again, we view science as being the enemy to ufology. We've got to elevate ufology to the category of a science if we're going to be respected. You take a look at the work Bud Hopkins did originally with his abduction research. His original empirical studies are absolutely wonderful. They have been duplicated by others. There's clearly a phenomenon going on in the alien abduction phenomena. The problem is nobody has taken it to the next step. Nobody's looked to see, can't
right.
we find a psychological aberration that explains it? Is there something in human history that explains it? Does our pop culture explain it? We don't look at that. Instead, we continue to gather the same kind of material over and over again.
And it doesn't take us anywhere.
Absolutely correct. It's the same thing I've said about, you know, how many more sighting reports do we need in the files? How many nocturnal lights do we have to investigate before we say, yeah, something's going on here. Let's move to the next level. Let's try to design some experiments that will explain what's going on or test the various hypotheses that we may have rather than going out and gathering another sighting report.
Now, in your book, The Randall Report, you do a treatment on MJ-12. Now, of course, that's a very controversial topic even today. What is your treatment of MJ-12?
I have no doubt that the MJ-12 documents are a hoax. There's no doubt in my mind, and it's based on, again, a look at the scientific evidence. There's a question document expert who does not want his name bandied about, but I've talked to him personally, and what he tells me makes perfect sense. We also take a look at the documents themselves. They're filled with flaws. There's all kinds of mistakes in them. These are not the kind of documents that would be created at this high level. And so I think that the evidence is very persuasive that MJ-12 is a hoax. In fact, the operations manual, which is the latest document to get publicity, is clearly a hoax because it makes reference to Area 51. Now, the document is the manual is dated April of 1954, and in 1954, Groom Lake, where Area 51 is, was in private hands. There was no Area 51 in 1954.
Right.
If the document refers to an area that did not exist, clearly the document is a fraud.
Absolutely. Okay, we're going to take another break. When we come back out, I'm going to get into the Chupacabras. And
I just watched on Explorer.
Yeah?
National Geographic Explorer.
Yeah. We'll hear about that when we come back from break. Kevin Randall's my guest, 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-836-2009. We shall return in just a moment. I'm Michael Corbin, and this is the Paranet Continuum.
Don't touch that dial. AM 1280, Ralph.
Get ready to copy down some computer addresses. I'm going to tell you how you can plug into the oldest and most reliable news and information service on UFOs and the paranormal on the entire planet. It's the Paranet Information Services Worldwide Network. First of all, check out our page on the World Wide Web. It provides you hot links to other UFO and paranormal sites, along with audio clips from recent Paranet radio shows and much more. Type in www.paranet.org/Paranet/. If you're a subscriber to America Online, CompuServe, or the Microsoft Network, you can access the 7 Paranet news groups covering UFOs, metaphysics, parapsychology, and more. Just select the Internet News Group function from your online service and search for Paranet. You can also send us email at this address, paranet@paranet.org. So, don't accept wannabes and substitutes. The name is Paranet, the world's most important communications network.
There are many magazines about UFOs. Continuum is different. Continuum is the official quarterly publication of Paranet and MICAP, and is the outgrowth of Paranet's worldwide communications network on paranormal phenomena. It's in-depth, challenging, and above all, fascinating. It takes a straight-ahead, no-nonsense look at UFOs, worldwide sighting reports, parapsychology, abduction phenomena, futuristic science, and much, much more. You can get Continuum for just $18 a year. Continuum is also available by fax for a small additional fee. Be informed. Call now and subscribe to Continuum. Call 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-836-6381. 1. Visa and MasterCard accepted. Continuum, published by Paranet Information Services in MICAP. Order yours today at 1-800-UFO-NET-1. Continuum, one of the most fascinating magazines you'll ever read.
AM 1280, Ralph. Are you?
Truth is sometimes stranger than fiction. Finding out the truth is the hard part. Join us in our search with the Paranet Continuum. Here's your host, Michael Corbett.
And again, the number is 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-836-2009. My guest is Kevin Randall. It's a very, very interesting program, Kevin. I want to thank you for joining us. Before we went to break, we were talking about the chupacabras. Now, I have a problem with that whole chupacabra thing. People have been asking me, well, what do you think about it? Well, I think it's crap. what's your take on it?
I wouldn't say crap. I think we define it as an urban legend.
Okay.
That there are people who really believe they've seen it. There are people out there talking about what they think they have seen. But I think it takes on the same proportions of an urban legend. And if we take a look at The Vanishing Hitchhiker by Jan Grunwald, who is a folklorist, and these are the stories that sort of circulate throughout society, and everybody's heard them. And I don't know how many times when I was in the Army, for example, people would come around collecting cigarette packs because there had been this story that if you collected enough cigarette packs, the cigarette companies would donate iron lungs to hospitals. Never any truth to it.
Yeah.
But I remember these people collecting, having these shopping bags full of these empty cigarette packages.
Now, a chupacabra is supposed to be what, alien goat sucker?
Well, there was, as I said, National Geographic just covered that tonight, and they had some fellow from Puerto Rico go back to look for it, and his conclusion was that it is part of the culture, part of the mythology of the Latinos, but there really is no basis in fact for it, and it's that sort of thing. There really doesn't seem to be any evidence. If the beast exists, the number of appearances that it has made, somebody would have secured a carcass of it by now. We have good physical evidence after 2 years of chasing this thing in Puerto Rico. Police officers have allegedly shot at it. It's been hit a number of times, but it always manages to escape. That, to me, suggests an urban legend. Now, in the Randall Report, we talk about the chupacabras, and I used a lot of the work done by Scott Corrales. He was a big help on that section. And I got an email after he'd read the book, and he said that he couldn't agree with me more, that seems to be the direction it's going. So the consensus seems to be that chupacabras is basically an urban legend, an urban myth.
Okay, all right. Now, next month marks the 50th anniversary of the famous Roswell crash.
Absolutely.
You're going to be there, right?
I'll be speaking at the UFO Enigma Museum, sponsored by John Price, on the 1st of July. Then on the 2nd of July, Carl Flack and I will be debating the Project Mogul hypothesis, whether or not Project Mogul accounts for the crash of the craft. And then another fellow, Russ Estes, who is a documentary film producer, will be speaking the next night about what his research into the UFO phenomenon has done. So the UFO Enigma Museum at the Roswell Performing Arts Center is sponsoring a number of lectures, and I'll be involved in some of that.
Now, you've done probably more than anybody else toward uncovering what happened out there in July of 1947. What new information has come out recently on this case?
I think the biggest news that's come out is probably the destruction of the Glenn Dennis story. Glenn Dennis was a Roswell mortician who told about this nurse that he knew And she, of course, left the base right after it happened. She had seen the bodies. She had been involved in an autopsy, and she went off to England, was killed in a plane crash, according to Glenn Dennis. Extensive research has shown that the nurse never existed. And this is one of the interesting things. We were able to prove a negative, if you will, prove the nurse didn't exist. I think we did that.
Mm-hmm.
She's in none of the documents you would expect her to find her in. For example, there was a yearbook that was produced in 1947. Walter Hott, who was responsible for that, told me that 10 to 20% of the people assigned to the base were not in the yearbook. So the fact her picture in the yearbook doesn't eliminate her completely, and it's really not particularly worrisome. There was a telephone directory for the base. She's not in there. The unit history, she doesn't show up there. The morning reports, she doesn't show up there. As we continue to check documentation and we're able to get our hands on the documentation, we could find no evidence that this woman ever existed. It became very worrisome. Then a fellow named Vic Golubic in Phoenix undertook a search for the nurses and found a record of 124,000 nurses who had been in the Army in this time period. Her name didn't surface there. So when Glenn was confronted with this information, he said, well, I never liked any of the Roswell researches anyway, and I made up the name. And so what he'd done is forced us to chase a name for 5 years.
That did not exist.
That he now claims didn't exist. Well, any time that you get into an investigation and one of the witnesses begins to alter the story that radically, then the story is probably not true. There is another aside there. He had once had discussed with me why we had not found his nurse yet, and I tried to explain to him the problems of searching for somebody after 50 years, and especially a woman who may have gotten married and changed her last name. It kind of complicated the task, but he thought we should be able to do it faster. When we confronted him with the information, we couldn't find it. He said, well, I never gave you the right name. This just does not ring true. And I think we caught him with his fingers in the cookie jar, and the story of the nurse is bogus. And so we must eliminate Glenn Dennis' testimony. And that's kind of what I was talking about earlier as we look at the evidence for the UFO phenomenon. If the evidence takes us somewhere we don't want to go, I certainly didn't want to eliminate the Glenn Dennis' testimony.
Mm-hmm.
But what other conclusion can we draw based on the information that has been developed
right
through a number of sources? The only conclusion we can draw is that Glenn Dennis' tale of a nurse is not true.
Now, a few weeks ago, a UFO program on the Discovery Channel has claimed that a new government report on Roswell is going to be released in the near future. Do you know what they could be talking about, or what's going to happen with that?
If the rumors are correct, and I'm hoping they are,
uh-huh,
because it's going to make it so much easier for us to dispose of the Air Force reports, apparently they have found documentation, there's a surprise, that suggests that there was an operation like Operation Paperclip, which was the operation by German rocket scientists over the United States, that operated out of Japan, and they were bringing over the Fugo balloon people who help us develop our balloon technology. They were using a Horton Brothers flying wing design from Germany as a basis for a lifting body, and the Japanese scientists were lifting this craft underneath a Fugo balloon, dropping it to float back to Earth so they could spy on the Soviets. And this is what crashed outside of Roswell.
I'm sorry, that sounds outrageous.
Well, yeah, when I posted this on the internet, I after I described it, I put in parenthetical statement, insert laughter here.
Yeah, I can.
If this is true, then what about their final report? So their final report wasn't their final report. This would be their final report. And when can we expect their third final report?
So are they saying now that Mogul will be canceled as a result of this?
I'm not sure. I'm thinking what they're going to do. They're going to have Mogul balloons and Fugo balloons and all kinds of balloons all over the sky in southern New Mexico in 1947, dropping this stuff that nobody could identify except certain people. It's a preposterous explanation, and I understand. I think it's Popular Mechanics is outlining this, and all the witnesses that we were told were liars or bogus or whatever, we're now saying, well, their testimony was correct, but their conclusion that it was extraterrestrial, that it was alien technology, is incorrect. It was really earthborn technology. And what strikes me as extremely ludicrous is the Fugo balloons were made out of rice paper.
Sure.
The only thing that was interesting about the Fugo balloons is that the Japanese discovered the jet stream. So it didn't. There was nothing that they were doing that our scientists already hadn't done. It would be kind of like bringing the Japanese scientists working on the atomic bomb over to the United States to help us. Ours worked. They never got theirs off the drawing board. So it's stupid to bring their scientists over to help us develop the atomic bomb because we'd already done it. It's the same thing with the balloons. Our balloons were much better. The envelopes that encompassed the gas were much better than the rice paper balloons the Japanese were using. It's just an absolutely ludicrous explanation, and I'm praying that the story I've heard, and it's from sources who are fairly reliable, is accurate, because it's going to be so easy to bring down the entire Air Force explanations of Roswell. But I'm hoping that this is true.
Well, that's very interesting. Give them enough time. They'll be claiming that they were the ones that started the balloon festival in Albuquerque.
I think they did. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, that's very, very interesting. What do you think is going on with them? Are they just desperately trying to debunk this whole thing, or are they just trying to make asses of themselves?
Well, it seems to me if they wanted to debunk this whole thing, their best move is to ignore us. But
you think so?
They seem to feel that they have to respond to us. Well, why does the Air Force care what a bunch of UFO nuts believes if there's nothing to their story?
Mm-hmm.
Or nothing to this idea of a balloon or an alien spaceship crash? If they keep responding to us, they keep talking about this, so I don't understand the motivation behind it, because all they're doing is making themselves look silly in the process. You know, they say, well, we lied to 1947. We checked our records. We discovered, you know, it wasn't the weather balloon we said it was in 1947. What it really was a weather balloon. But they imply there's something special about these Project Mogul balloons, and what you get right down to it, the balloons themselves were regular weather balloons. There wasn't anything so unusual about them that the people in Roswell, the officers and men of the 509th Bomb Group, shouldn't have been able to identify them for exactly what they were. Weather balloons, that's what it was.
Yeah. Ghosts of Roger Ramey. We got to go to a break, and when we come back, we'll get some closing comments from you. I want to highlight some of the other topics in your book as well, the Randall Report. And we're going to hear about two other books that you're publishing very shortly, or if they're not even out there now. Kevin Randall is my guest. Again, the book is The Randall Report, UFOs of the 90s, and it is published by Evans & Company. And a very interesting book and an interesting guest, so stay tuned. I'm Michael Corbin, and this is the Paranet Continuum.
Denver's talking about Ralph. Are you?
Support the Paranet Continuum by ordering from the 1997 Paranet catalog. Paranet offers products and services designed to keep you abreast of the latest in ufology and news of the paranormal. Get full-color laser-printed t-shirts and sweatshirts with space travel and alien themes, including their spectacular black-and-white Paranet t-shirt. Get audio cassettes of more than 150 Paranet Continuum radio shows, featuring interviews of people such as Richard Hoagland, Jacques Vallée, Travis Walton, Stanton Friedman, Malachi Martin, Alan Hale, Betty Hill, Edgar Mitchell, and others, and topics ranging from abductions to Zeta Reticuli. You can also get Continuum, Paranet's official quarterly magazine. Paranet memberships have access to MyCap, our investigations group, and discounts to merchandise. The 1997 Paranet catalog is free. Call now, 1-800-836-6381. That's 1-800-836-6381 for the Paranet catalog.
We can rebuild it. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's best personal computer just for you. Better, stronger, faster than it was before. We have a stark ambition to make your computer everything you need it to be. You've had it in your dreams, now get it in your computer. Better monitors, stronger, bigger hard drives, faster processors and modems. You can have the technology the government can't cover up at prices far below what the Defense Department pays for a paperclip. Call Stark Ambition today at 303-809-0274 or visit our website at www.starknet.com. Call for the best prices on components, new systems, service and repair on single units and networks. On the information superhighway, it's better to travel with a nerd. So get yours today and put our Stark Ambition to work for you. Call Stark Ambition 303-809-0274 or see our price list on the web at www.starknet.com.
AM 1280, Ralph.
Thank you.
Denver's talking about Ralph. Are you?
Truth is sometimes stranger than fiction. Finding out the truth is the hard part. Join us in our search with the Paranet Continuum. Here's your host, Michael Corbett.
And again, my guest tonight has been Kevin Randall. We've been talking about his new book, The Randall Report, UFOs in the 90s. And just to kind of give you an idea of some of the chapters that he has in this book, we've got the Shag Harbor crash, 1967, Travis Walton and alien abductions, 1975. Of course, we talked about Gulf Breeze. He's got something here about STS-48 discovery and UFOs from 1991. And, of course, there's a considerable amount of discussion about Roswell. Kevin, real quick, I've got to ask you this. Roswell is still regarded by many people probably as one of the best UFO cases ever. Do you agree with that?
And I think it's based on the number of witnesses, the corroborative testimony, and the limited documentation that we've been able to find. Yeah, I think it's the best.
Okay. Listen, real quick, what are the dates that you're going to be out there in Roswell?
I'll be down there. I'll be down there, I think, speaking on the 1st of July, lecturing, and then Carl Flock and I will be debating on the 2nd of July, and Russ Desses will be lecturing on the 3rd of July, and that's through the UFO Enigma Museum in Roswell.
Okay. And you have two other books that are either out or coming out, right?
I have one book called Project Blue Book Exposed, which is out momentarily, and another one called Conspiracy of Silence, which it talks quite a bit about the Condon Committee and why that wasn't a good study, and that should be out, if it's not out now, it should be out in the next couple of weeks.
Very good, Kevin, and I want to thank you again for being on the program. As always, it's been a pleasure having you on and talking to you about this stuff, and we'll have you back.
I appreciate that.
Okay, thank you. Again, my guest tonight was Kevin Randall, and his book is The Randall Report, UFOs in the 90s. Pick up a copy. That wraps it up for us tonight. We will be back next week, same time. Hope to see you then. Until next week, I'm Michael Corbin, telling you to keep your eyes on the skies. Good night.
The Public Station, 1280 Route.